Good afternoon. We will hear argument now in the case of EEOC against Walmart Stores. Ms. Sharon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Chelsea Sharon for the EEOC. We are here before this court a second time to urge you to reverse the district court's denial of injunctive relief. After we appealed the first denial of injunctive relief, this court issued a decision carefully cataloging several key flaws in the district court's analysis. Among other errors, this court noted that the district court had overlooked key trial evidence bearing on the likelihood of recurrence, in particular the position that Walmart managers took at trial that the company's policies did not permit long-term schedule accommodations. And this court rejected the district court's analysis that Walmart's formal policies made the requested relief here redundant, or that Walmart's lack of animus meant that the violations here were isolated. But on remand, Your Honor.
In your experience, when the EEOC asks for injunctive relief after a victory on the merits of a case, what sort of evidence will an employer present to show that an injunction is not necessary?
Your Honor, there could be a variety of different types of evidence. Some of the evidence that the district court looked to here could, in an appropriate case, favor a denial of injunctive relief, such as the company's policies intended to prevent future violations. The problem here was that Walmart's policies did not make clear the obligation to provide long-term schedule accommodations, and that the managers, of course, testified that they understood the policies to, in fact, prohibit those accommodations. So it's not that policies could not, in the appropriate case, favor a denial of injunctive relief, but here they, in fact, cut against a denial of injunctive relief in favor of granting the relief.
You know, as I look at the 8 forms of injunctive relief that you've requested, for me, numbers 2 and 6 seem to be the most responsive to the facts of this case, and also relatively modest in their scope. That is, direct Walmart to clarify in its materials that long-term accommodations are permissible, and to train its supervisors and managers on that clarification. Beyond those two injunctive measures, what, if any, would be as crucial, in your view, to prevent a recurrence of what happened with Ms. Faith?
Yes, Your Honor. We agree that requests 2 and 6 go directly to the heart of the misconception that Walmart managers had here about long-term schedule accommodations. Beyond that, the two categories of relief that we think are the most critical are some sort of monitoring or reporting provision like that in request 5, and some sort of what the district court called here obey the law relief like in request 1 and 3. And let me explain why we think both of those are critical. With respect to the monitoring and reporting provision, this is essential to allow EEOC to discover relevant violations. We, of course, don't have free roving investigative power, so we only become aware of violations when an individual files a charge. Not every intellectually disabled employee, of course, will file a charge regarding denial of schedule accommodations.
Doesn't that sound like a request that the judge give you something that was requested from Congress, but Congress didn't grant?
No, Your Honor. We're not asking for free roving investigative powers. We're simply trying to find a way to make sure that we can become aware of and respond to similar violations.
It sounds like something that the agency has repeatedly requested from Congress, actually, but not been given. Why should a judge do that?
Well, the goal, of course, of the injunction here is to prevent future violations. So we're looking to what is the most practical way that we can do that here, given evidence that violations are likely to recur absent injunctive relief. And one way that that can occur is for EEOC to become aware of those violations so that we can then act swiftly to redress them. And with respect to the obey the law relief, I realize this is more controversial, but we do think that that serves two critical purposes. One is to deter future violations, And the second is to ensure that EEOC has a mechanism to swiftly address violations that do occur without requiring the agency to begin an entire lengthy administrative process or file a new lawsuit. Your Honor, just briefly moving to the other ways in which we believe the district court abuses discretion here, or I'm happy to answer any other questions about this, the scope of injunctive relief that
we're... So are we sticking with, as far as the most important, really focusing on request number five? And did you address 2 and 6?
Yes, Your Honor. So with respect to, let me just briefly respond to that. With respect to requests 2 and 6, that, in our view, goes right to the heart of the misconception that the Walmart managers held in this case and would be directed to correct that misimpression. With respect to request 5 and the request 1 and 3, what the district court called obey the law relief, we think these work sort of in tandem. The monitoring provision allows us to discover the violations, and the obey the law relief allows us to have a mechanism to address those violations as they occur.
In terms of number 2.
Yes.
Should the required modification be limited to, or at least emphasize, long-term scheduling accommodations? Because it seems to me that is where the misunderstanding was focused.
Yes, Your Honor, at minimum, we think it should address the long-term schedule accommodations. With respect to this case specifically, the evidence was about the misconception for schedule accommodations. Of course, there have been other cases like the case against Walmart that this court affirmed the verdict in 2022, which also involved the denial of a different type of long-term accommodation that was a job coach accommodation. And we do see a larger pattern of inflexibility on Walmart's part regarding deviating from rules and bending its rules where the ADA's accommodation mandate requires it to. That's why we've specified long-term accommodations. But if this court's troubled by that, we'd be happy to limit it to long-term schedule accommodations if that's a particular point of concern for the court. We think that that at minimum is necessary in this case.
If we were to decide to remand once again, should we grant Walmart a third opportunity to document what steps, if any, it has taken in response to the verdict in this case?
We don't think that would be appropriate, Your Honor. Walmart has, of course, now had 2 opportunities to present to the district court in connection with injunctive relief what measures it has taken to guard against future violations here, and it simply has not done so. It continues to resist even the simplest remedial measures that EEOC has sought, nor has it introduced any other types of evidence that could meet its burden here. If this court has no further questions, I'd be happy to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, or I'm happy to address anything else. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel. Mr. Setlin.
Good to be with you all again, Your Honors. EEOC asked this court to order the district court to put the nation's largest private employer under essentially intrusive court supervision at the national or regional level based on a single incident that occurred at one store. Now, I'd like to begin right with the questions that Judge Rovner was asking to my friend. In terms of the kind of evidence that is presented in other cases, the court need not look further than the case that my friend was just discussing, which was the Walmart case from 2022. Walmart there presented the same type of evidence or argumentation that are presented here. This court had no trouble affirming Judge Peterson's, you know, 2-page denial of the injunctive request there based on the same kind of evidence. And I
counsel,
see,
yes. Judge Rovner is not in the screen.
Oh, sorry.
You should face forward where the camera is.
Okay. Apologies.
No, you should face forward. Okay?
Okay, Your Honor.
Judge Rovner is not in the screen. Any of the screens. Really. She will see you best if you face straight forward.
Okay, Your Honor. taking, Your Honor. And Judge Griesbach, we would respectfully submit, deserves the same kind of respect when he exercises his statutory authority to decide whether Congress's words, injunction may issue, as Judge Peterson did in the 2022 case. Now, with regard to the specific...
Forgive me, Mr. Taitlin. I asked a very similar, if not the same question, the last time we met, but I wasn't terribly satisfied at that time that it was answered. Would you agree that on the current record, we still do not know what steps, if any, Walmart has taken in response to the jury's verdict in this case in order to prevent a recurrence?
I did not understand Your Honor's and the court's remand instructions to permit for additional evidence. As I read the court's order, the court was saying, Judge Griesbach, here are some additional considerations and some errors that you made. Please take another look, understanding it is your call. Judge Griesbach did exactly that. If Your Honors were intending for Walmart to produce additional evidence, including, you know, the kind of affidavit evidence that EEOC has chided us for not producing about whether this is truly an isolated incident in among our 1.6 million associates, and wanted the remand to involve that, that certainly could have been done. That is not how he read this court's decision.
I would think that a sophisticated firm like Walmart would take certain steps to make sure that the type of discrimination that took place in this case never reoccurred. For example, perhaps clarifying that long-term accommodations, including work schedule accommodations, are permissible under Walmart's own policies and may be required by the ADA. Are you aware of any such steps that Walmart has taken? And if so, I'm afraid I'm not completely certain of why you did not make that part of the record, unless, as you say, our order allowed you to think that, you didn't have to have any evidence in the record. I mean, I'm having a bit of a problem, because absent evidence as to corrective measures that Walmart has taken, why shouldn't we assume that there is in fact a likelihood that similar discrimination will recur?
Well, if Your Honors were permitting an opportunity for Walmart to submit additional evidence, Your Honors should remain for that. I don't read any language in this court's prior opinion permitting for submission of additional evidence. Now, our position, and I think fully supported by both the trial record and by this court's decision, was that Walmart's employees that were involved in the situation did not consider Ms. Space and her sister's request as a request for an accommodation under the ADA based on its disability at all. Now, this court determined that within the very broad standard review for a jury verdict, based on our experience with Ms. Spaeth, we should have followed up and had an interactive process. But if that is the basis for the jury's verdict, then any contested dispute about what Walmart's employees thought about what our policy means would not have been the basis for the jury's decision. It would not have been the basis for any changes on that front.
But further, I thought the record was there was a misunderstanding. I thought there was a misunderstanding for the managers did not believe that they could accommodate.
Your Honor, this is very important. That is not at all. And I'm going to point Your Honors to Supplemental Appendix 47, 50, 52, 87 through 88, 103, 104, 120, 1 through 122 and 138 through 140. Each time, every employee that they reference say we did not understand her as requesting any ADA accommodations, not that she was requesting one that wasn't available. Now, this court held that the jury reasonably could have concluded based on the evidence that because of these managers' experience with her, they should have followed up, engaged in an interactive process, and figured out that, in fact, she was requesting an ADA accommodation. In none of those citations or nowhere else in the record did the Walmart employees say the reason that we didn't send this up to the accommodation center was because we determined unilaterally that they were requesting something that's not permitted. What they said is we were not interpreting her as requesting ADA accommodation. There was a new schedule, lots of employees were very unhappy with it, and the Walmart employees understood those interactions that way. Now, it might be, and this court affirmed, that that could still be a violation of the ADA because of the prior experience with Ms. Spaeth. The employees should have known that she was really asking for an ADA accommodation because of her Down syndrome. But that doesn't go at all to the misconception that somehow our policies don't involve modified work schedules, whether short-term or long-term.
I think that's my question. Request number two and question number six, as Judge Roedner alluded to, goes to the heart of whether or not there needed to be additional training on the question regarding when an accommodation is being requested, more importantly, what the managers could and could not do.
Well, so, Your Honor, let me take two and then six. Okay. With regard to two, and, I turn your attentions to Appendix 136, mm-hmm. the accommodations and employment policy that we have says clear as day that modified work schedules is one of the available options. And if the owner looks at all the other items in that list, and I know we have limited time here, but you'll see it makes no sense to read into that clear language some sort of a short-term work schedules only modification. I mean, the other items on this list include providing readers or interpreters. That wouldn't make sense for it to be short-term. Changing non-essential job functions, same thing. So the policy on this point could not be clearer. So theoretically, if the district court could have, in its very broad discretion, specifically given to it by Congress, said that because of the experience in this one case, Walmart should amend this for the entire nation to have a parenthetical modified work schedules, including long-term. That is something that I think would have been in the district court's broad discretion. We think it's unnecessary. If Judge Griesbach had said, that's what I want to do, I want you to amend this, to put that parenthetical, there's a good chance we wouldn't appeal that, given that this discretion is given to him. But, it doesn't involve the same sort of burdensome monitoring that some of their much more adventurous requests involve. But again, Congress gave this authority, the May authority, to the district court. The district judge here, looked at this court's opinion and made that discretionary judgment. And if you take a look at the plain text of the policy, it doesn't make too much sense to add that, but that's obviously going to be up to this court how it wants to deal with that. Now, with regard to request number six, mm-hmm. It's important that request is not limited to long-term work schedules. It just says work schedules. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is that just for Region 53, with 133 stores, we're going to, have to put into our training modules an additional item of training for long-term work schedules just because of the facts of this one case. Again, we think that's unnecessary. We think that our employees deal with, and supervisors deal with, a lot of potential situations. To have this particular one singled out doesn't make a whole lot of sense given this is an isolated incident. But again, if Judge Griesbach had, upon his looking at this trial record and exercising his discretion, decided, yes, they need to put that in their training modules, then, likely we wouldn't have appealed that either. But again, that is given to him in his discretion. And
please forgive me, but, for instance, Mr. Spude is now the top HR individual for Region 53. And he was the individual who insisted at trial that Walmart's policy, quote, in no way obligated Walmart in any way to offer permanent long-term scheduling changes. To the contrary, he testified that providing such an accommodation would be, quote, against our normal process. And existing accommodation schedules do not permit, quote, approvals of set schedules, guaranteed hours, or creating special schedules. Well, this sort of testimony suggests to me, at any rate, that the denial of a scheduling accommodation to Ms. Spaeth may not have been a one-off or isolated mistake. And when you couple that with Walmart's directive that computer-generated work schedules were not to be modified except for business reasons, I don't know. The trial evidence tends to suggest this was not a simple mistake or a misunderstanding.
So, Your Honor, what Mr. Spude is talking about there, and what the other employees are talking about there, is what the, is what can be done at the store level. Before this new system was put into place, the folks at the store level could make those adjustments. Afterwards, they could not. However, if there was an accommodation request, an ADA request submitted, that would be then forwarded on to the Accommodation Services Center, which is why Mr. Spude is saying the normal processes, which is adjusting at the store level, were no longer available. And if you look at what Ms. Olson says, she said, after articulating just what you quoted from Mr. Spude, said, well, if there was an ADA problem, then they would have to submit an accommodation request. And that's at Appendix 77. So the fundamental problem that occurred here is none of these employees understood her as requesting an ADA accommodation because of her Down syndrome. It is true that under the new policy, if they had understood that, they could not have then edited her work schedule at the store level. The process would have been, as Ms. Olson correctly said, to send that to the Accommodations Services Center.
Mr. Chaitlin, forgive me, but I've been trying to get this in. Her sister told them about the ADA when she came with the mother. She said she talked to them about the ADA.
Your Honor, I understand we had a bit of a colloquy about this the last time, and what she said was that she couldn't, that it was the ADA, and she said, well, Ms. Spaeth is getting too hot. That was her claim. Sorry, Your Honor.
That was shorthand for what happens to her.
Right, and that was not the theory presented to the jury at all. The theory presented to the jury was this groove theory, which is that people with Down syndrome have a difficulty adjusting to change. So there was a complete mismatch between what Ms. Stevenson said when she invoked the ADA and the only theory that the EEOC thought it could stand up before the trial. But in any event, Your Honor, I'm not here today to dispute that a reasonable jury could have drawn various inferences in finding liability, or that the district judge here could have drawn various inferences in making the discretionary call. But ultimately, it was the jury's call.
Yes, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Ms. Sharon?
Yes, just briefly, Your Honors, and I apologize. I was also looking at the camera to address Judge Rovner, so I apologize for that. Just with respect to Walmart's continued insistence that this was an honest mistake that it made about whether Ms. Spaeth needed an accommodation, I'm surprised that it would continue to resist the jury's verdict that this court affirmed in that respect. The district court is, of course, bound in making findings about injunctive relief by the verdict and by this court's affirmance of the verdict. So this court determined that there was ample evidence to support the jury's conclusion that that Walmart knew Ms. Spaeth needed an accommodation. Not only was it made aware of that by her sister, but then after careful review at the national headquarters level of the termination, when it was very clear at that point that there was an ADA accommodation request in place, Denise Morgan, an ethics manager responsible for overseeing discrimination complaints at the company level, determined that the company's policies in fact authorized the treatment of misfaith here. So the idea that this is an honest mistake is not, in my opinion, respectfully, a basis on which that injunctive relief could be denied here. What is very clear from the record is Mr. Spudi's testimony that long-term schedule accommodations, as Judge Rovner pointed out, he said they were in no way obligated to provide those accommodations. The idea that he was just referring to what could happen at the store level, I don't think is a fair reading of the trial transcript. He was asked at Appendix 105 of our appendix, but there's, at Appendix 101, but Walmart's accommodation policies do contemplate set schedules, right? And he responded, they contemplate offering short-term minor changes or adjustments to availability or preferences, but in no way are we obligated in any way to offer permanent long-term schedule changes. That was not limited to what could be done at the store level. That was a statement about what the policies contemplate as a whole. Just briefly, with respect to the idea that Appendix 136, the policy regarding modified work schedules, could only be read as embracing long-term schedule accommodations, that might be my opposing counsel's reading of the policy, but that was not the reading that Mr. Spudi articulated at trial. He was asked at Appendix 105 to review this policy on the stand. He looked at it and he, in fact, refused to agree with the premise that that policy would allow for long-term schedule accommodations. And again, I'd point out, of course, that with respect to the idea that this was somehow an isolated incident that shouldn't extend in terms of injunctive relief beyond the store level, Mr. Spudi, of course, oversees the entirety of Walmart's region and is responsible for all 114 stores and more than 30,000 associates in that region. There's no further questions. We thank your honors, and we would ask you to reverse the district court's denial of injunctive relief and remand for entry of an appropriate injunction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.